and the actors are acting in front of you, it's as if they're acting only for you.
I don't restrict their performance.
You can never tell from an actor, from a leading actor, what he's going
to
do.
Act yourself, figure out how to rehearse.
And you just have to do it.
Try to not over-talk it or overthink it. Leave some mystery to happen.
Because I was an actor myself, I know what they're going for.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Don't let them do it the same way twice. That's what we're going to be talking about today. What does that mean? It means the relationship with you and your actors when you're filming scenes, you're doing auditions. If they're doing it the same way they did the previous take, you need to cut that out. You need to nip it in the bud and you need to deal with it and give directions so it is different. And if they continue to do the same thing, regardless of the direction, then that's not a great actor that you want to be working with. You want to find someone that will be able to take direction and do it differently each take, because there'll be rewards for that. You're going to have more options for that. You're going to have someone that is a fluid artist that is going to deal with the situation as it is presented, not as it is prepared by the actor. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But I guess let's talk about why you would think it's a good thing for the actor to do the same way twice. Like, why would you think that's a good way? Like, this sounds counterintuitive a little bit. Like, don't you want, like, the movie that you have in your head that you've written and you want them to say the way that you've pictured it? Like, why would you think it is a good thing? Well, the reason is like, if you're doing an audition and, you know, let's say they do it the same way once and they go, great, let's see it again. And they do it the same way and they have the same inflections, they have the same movement. You're like, sweet, this is going to be great. The continuity, this guy, I don't have to worry about this guy. Like, this guy is going to be absolutely brilliant because I know exactly what I'm going to get. Now, the problem is when it gets to 5 o'clock in the morning, when you're shooting on set, it's going to be exactly the same. When it's midnight, it's going to be exactly the same. When it's midday, it's going to be exactly the same. And if things happen on set that are wrong, if things are different, if you decide to rewrite the scene last minute because things aren't working, or the other actor that you've hired just changes the dynamic completely and you go, holy shit, I didn't see this coming. Wow, this guy, the other actor is a star. Like, let's change this around. Let's do this. Let's alter this. Let's make this the focus instead. Like, I've been looking at this film the wrong way. Now you've got an actor that's still stuck in that groove of doing it the same way, and you're fucked. You're literally fucked because you can't work with this person. The whole point of this is you want an actor that you can work with, that can actually take direction and actually be manual, and you can mold them into someone like an their own entity, that they're going to give you different choices in an edit. So that's what we're talking about about doing it. You want an actor that's going to give you something special every time, something different, and we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, there's some really, really good points you just actually made. And I want to start off first with differentiating the idea of doing it physically the same way based on a certain way of blocking it or a certain necessity for shooting a shot technically, right? And and what stands behind it, you know? And this is partly to do with, you know, the actors coming to terms with interpreting it before it's actually being done, and then being set in their way on interpreting it that way, because they think that that way of doing it is the right way. It's the only way. You know, it's the fault, you know, of the actor, it's fault of the director, and it's fault of the script, because sometimes the script locks you in into doing it a certain way. But the hardest thing to do, and I know I've actually had this problem, I know speaking to you, Dean, you've had the same issues as well, is your ability to let things go and let your mind not do the talking, basically not controlling things as they should be, right? Is very, 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 very good creatively, you know, in daily life, in certain things that you need to get done, you know, having an idea or a basis on having certain things that you can, so to speak, control or have in your control is a good thing. But creatively, when you're, you know, looking at actors performing, you're not only looking at the way they're putting down a cup or the way they're, you know, sitting down or all the physical stuff. You're listening to and seeing everything from take to take. You know, and this idea we've spoken before of certain directors like Kubrick and, you know, Fincher having their actors doing something over and over and over and over again, 200 takes or whatever it is, was their basis of trying to break those habits. So they, even though they're still putting down, you know, I know in the scene where in Zodiac, in the scene where Jake Gyllenhaal, right, he's in sitting in the car and he's putting down a case of files that, you know, he got him to do it like X amount of times, and he was just putting down the files, you know, and the way he was doing it. What essentially you're looking for is something that's organic and something that makes sense for the scene on the basis of, you know, knowing the script, knowing the characters and knowing all that stuff, but also having the ability to let all that shit go, because at the end of the day, you got to have more room to edit. And I know I've heard Mark Travis speak about this. You know, he's a director's coach in Hollywood. He's been doing it for millennia, and one of the things he says is, you know, he'd be so surprised. He would come on set and coach directors, and he'd be so surprised when he'd watch a scene and the actors would do it a certain way, and the director would be really happy, and he would, you know, call cut, and then Mark Travis would turn to the director and say, "You really want to do that?" And he said, yeah, it's exactly what I wanted. And he said, "Are you sure?" He said, yeah, sure, it's, I know the script, I know whatever it is, I'm 100% sure. He's like, all right, whatever. And he goes, 9 out of 10 times when you go to the edit, you realize that what you got there does not, does not encompass or fit in with what you could have done or the other possibilities of the different ways of getting the character's performance, that the scene across could have been done, you know. So, you know, it's this, you know, you got to be on, as Dean says, you got to nip it in the butt. If you're seeing it at the stage of your actor coming in prepared mentally and having, you know, the script in hand, the lines, the blocking, the everything down pat, it means they already have anticipated everything. And the biggest thing you should know is what actors need to know, if they do or they don't, regardless, it's your job to see it, is anticipation, right? They got to guard against anticipating what's coming up. That's the whole magic trick of it, because realistically, it's, you know what's written, you know the scene, you know how it's going to end. It's a film, there's crew, there's people, it's a magic show. But the whole time as an actor, you're anticipating those moments of knowing what's coming next. And you know, you would have probably heard the jargon, you know, being present or being in the moment. It's all jargon. If you understand it from not knowing what will happen or what's going to happen is the atmosphere, you know, you should create, or the actors should know to create. That's the actors you're hiring. If you're, you know, if they're not aware of it, then that's something you should you watch for. You know, it's something that's very it's very prevalent. So, you know, it's not just watching the scene and going, okay, it's exactly what I wanted. This is exactly the direction that we're taking it. And I'm going to call cut. We're going to move on to the next shot. Having the ability, and I've been a victim to this as well, having the ability to play the scene somewhere irrespective of where it should be going is a great tool, because it's like we were saying, you know, in the edit, you're using the edit as like a painter with these paints. You have many different colors that you can use, and the paintbrush is basically the scenes with the paints being, you know, the different colors of the characters and the things that are brought out in the scene. So that's very, very prevalent. That's why this episode is very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Because another aspect of directing is the edit. Now, we're going to do a future episode about editing performance, but this is, like, I guess the first part of that is you want the material to edit, because editing is basically writing. It's writing after you've got all the materials. It's writing with jigsaw puzzles where you've got all the pieces and now you edit it together and you mash it up and you create flow and you create rhythm and you create, you know, like the scenes in the edit, and you write it again. But this time you've just got pieces. You can't change, you can't add anything extra to it. You've got the pieces set that you've filmed over a certain amount of time, and now you've got to play with those jigsaw puzzles. So if an actor's doing it the same every time, then what you essentially got is basically someone doing an audition of, like, them trying to nail the performance. They're doing it differently. The only difference is they're trying to get it better and better and better. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is they may do a performance differently. They might attack the scene in a different way than what's written on the page. I mean, if you look at the movie Whiplash with J.K. Simmons, and there's, you've probably seen this on Facebook or Instagram, there's a script to screen where you see the script at the bottom of the page and you see the performance. Now, J.K. Simmons, he's not saying the script word for word. He's skipping paragraphs, he's changing the way some sentences are, sometimes he's inflecting more, he's throwing a few more F-bombs. You know, it's very different to what the finished script was. But maybe he did. Maybe there's other takes where he did it word perfectly. Or maybe the director was like, hey, Damien Chazelle was just like, hey, just, you know, I trust you've done your work. Just, you know, you're brilliant. Just do however the scene you do it. You know, do it a few times and I'll do that. And the thing is, he might have done it 3, 4, 5 different ways. And he's edited and he's taken the first part of take one and the third part from take three. So, but if you want to see an act like this in real life, like an actual example of this, there's a movie called The Score, directed by Frank Oz. Came out early 2000s, and it's with Marlon Brando, Robert De Niro, and Edward Norton about a heist. And if you Google Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro improvisation, you will see 3 takes of Marlon Brando doing the scene, and you'll watch him do a take one, take two, take three, and then I think they do 2 takes, and then Frank Oz, you can hear off camera, you can go, yeah, great, guys, I've got everything I need for this scene, go have fun, go do whatever you want to do, you know, like, go for it, like, whatever you're thinking, like, we've got it, just now let's just do another take, and whatever your instincts go, you go, and they do it again. And then you can also Google from movie clips the score, and you can actually see the scene between Marlon Brando and Robert De Niro that made the final film. And you can see in take one, you know, like De Niro, basically what the scene is De Niro's asking for, money for a job, for a heist. And he's asking for $6 million. And Marlon Brando's like, what? $6 million? You're joking, right? Like, that's, you know, like maybe four, maybe $3 million, but $6 million you want for this job or for this heist. Like, that's how much you want. He's like, whoa, why? You know, why are you asking for so much? What's the catch? You know, and De Niro's like, yeah, it's my one last job. You know, the old cliche of like, it's my last job. This is it. I'm done after this. So this is going to be a big score after this, and that's it. I'm done. It's over. So, you know, when De Niro first goes, you know, $6 million, De Niro like plays with his bottle. He grabs a bottle and he goes, operator, you hear what this guy's saying? $6 million. What are you crazy? He does that in take one. He doesn't do it in take two and take three. He does it completely differently. He sometimes mumbles. He sometimes repeats the line like $6 million. You know, he takes pauses. And then there's another bit in take three when he says this line. He just makes up this line. I'll believe it when dead pigs eat my brother. Oh, no. I'll believe it when pigs eat my brother. That's the line. And he doesn't say in take one. He doesn't say it in take two. But he says it in take three. And both those moments make it into the final scene. So this is why you want your actors, you know, you want to hire great actors who are able to do things differently, because then you can create the edit. And then even the pacing of the scene, you can see the pacing and the rhythm and all this. And it's just a really great example for you guys to have a look for yourselves and actually like go through the different takes and just work out, okay, that's from take one, that's from take two, that's from take three. And see how it goes from like a professional Hollywood movie set, of how it goes from the three different takes to a finished product. So definitely check that out, because it's really going to be valuable for you guys as directors.
Yeah, so that's a really good example. It brings me to also something I remember watching as well a while ago with behind the scenes of Streetcar Named Desire with Marlon Brando and Elia Kazan. And there's a scene where Brando comes in and he goes next to the all he's supposed to do is walk up to the fireplace, and I think he lights a cigarette. And the way he does it, they do a few of the takes, but the way he does it, none of the times, you know, can be replicated from the previous take. And it's a thing of, you know, people call it, it's masterful acting, it's, you know, it's great acting, it's his understanding on the basis of not anticipating what I just did in take one that I have to do in take two, that I have to do in take three, because the illusion always stands that if the audience is watching it, you know, they're watching it as if for the first time, even though you might have done 100 takes as David Fincher, but, you know, you could be watching the first take, like Dean said, a mixture of it in the edit. You could be watching the first take or the 89th take or the 67th take, you know, as the scene progresses. But in each of those takes, it's always happening as if it were for the first time. So, you know, one thing I want to make a point of this is when you want them to not do it the same way twice, it's not about getting them to be over the top, getting them to be interesting in air quotes, interesting and air quotes different, you know, and trying to be all energetic and crazy and out of the scene. No, it still has to make somewhat sense to the parameters of the scene, of the place that they're in, of what's going on. But it's on the basis of, you know, about having, you know, these different choices, and we keep saying that word. We're gonna do an episode on you know, choices to get into more depth, but it's about having adjustments. Let's say most of you guys would have heard that before, you know. And let's if we can take for a few minutes an example, right, just to kind of elaborate on this point. If you have, let's say, you know, a scene where a husband is saying goodbye to his wife and kids as he's going to war. So he's saying goodbye to his wife and kids. He's at the train station, and you know, it's the scene where he's possibly gonna, I don't want to define it as the last time, because the character doesn't know. That's the thing that we gotta discuss. So the scene could be written as, you know, or sorry, the film could be written as the character is going into war, and he knows because he's going into war that he's not gonna make it out. It's grim, you know. Everything is going black, right? So the actor gets seduced, and the director, they both get seduced when reading the script to say that because he's going to war, if we make an adjustment or if we make a choice that it's written that the way it's written is on the basis of, you know, he knows he's not coming back. That's why he's saying goodbye to his family. It means that, you know, you're playing into the script. You're already deciding or anticipating the way the story is unfolding, rather than what a real human being would be experiencing based on, you know, all the circumstances that are happening there that allow the person in real life, the book of real life, to decide at that moment, you know, based on who they are, how they say goodbye to their, you know, wife and their kids. Because that that in itself, if you can come up with your actors five different ways or five different adjustments or choices that the character would say, or the person, you know, would say goodbye to their family, then you have that palette of colors to work in your edit. Then you have something more to work with, rather than it's written like this. I've broken the script down. I know where the script needs to go. I know how it is, and therefore, once we get that, you know, once we nail it in the can, that's it. We move on to the next scene, you know. Which, look, it could work, and it works for a lot of directors. But I know for a fact, I've heard Paul Thomas Anderson's crew talk about, you know, his process of working, and he, when they shot Phantom Thread, he didn't even know how the film was going to turn out. They even said when he screened the initial cut, the first cut, and then later on as the cuts progressed, the whole film changed based on what they were shooting and how the film was edited and put together. It came out as a totally different film. You know, there was a point where they were saying that they were exploring the characters and exploring the ideas of they knew they were going to end up, because the story was written that way, they knew they were going to end up at the end of the story where it was set in stone, but they didn't know how the relationship was going to flourish, and he wanted it that way. Paul Thomas Anderson wanted it that way because it kept things fresh and organic, and it allowed them to not be obligated to push for certain things or do it the right way, or, you know, anticipate anything, you know. And that's the most important thing that you have to guard against. Like, if the actors are not seeing it, or if you're not allowing your actors to explore, then you should be aware that either you're anticipating what the scene's going to be, you know, how it's going to look or how it's going to end. You've already got it in your head. You've got everything that you're going to finalize it. Or, you know, the actor's doing that way and they can't move away from the idea that they have stuck in their head. And I've been a victim to this, you know, and I still, you know, to this day, I'm still trying to guard, you know, my own sensibilities of how I think it should be, of how I want it to be, even though it's, you know, I have an idea of what I like and don't like, but I always have to be on guard to say, maybe we could do it this way. Let's see how it looks like, and then we can decide later on. Not saying, you know, whatever. No, it doesn't work. It's a fact of let's see it. Something might come of it, even if it's a section of it, and then, you know, we can make adjustments to it. You know, so it's, you know, if we use this example, back to this example of the husband saying goodbye to his wife and his two children, you know, as he's about to go to war, it already puts a certain perspective, right? It puts a certain idea of, you know, I'm not going to see my family, you know, this is the last time I might see them. It's very easy to kind of play into this. Even as I'm speaking now, I'm actually, that's the first choice that I've basically come up with. But then give me another four different ways to say goodbye based on what's going on, based on how you create the scene with your actors. If they can't create it that way, if they can't, you know, bring five different adjustments or five different choices, then it's up to you to let them try or to be aware that it shouldn't just be one way, you know. And an example that just came to mind was in The Last of the Mohicans. There's a scene where Daniel Day-Lewis's character is saying goodbye to the female lead, and the way it was written, the way the scene is written, is on paper it looks like, you know, it looks like something different to the way he and the director, whatever, I don't know on how it actually came out, because how it actually came out, how he played it and how it was edited and put together, and is on the basis of he is telling her to stay strong. It's not a goodbye, I'm not going to see you. It's, you know, stay strong, I'll come back for you, we'll meet again sort of thing. You know, so it always has to be in the back of your mind as guarding at all moments of this bug called anticipation. You know, it's I'm anticipating how this scene is going to look like. I know where they have to land. I know how they're going to say it. And this is exactly how I want it, which, you know, unfortunately, 90% of people do it. And it turns out boring. Like, yeah, you might have a nice image and, you know, you might have something pretty to look at, but there's a sense of staleness behind it. And that staleness comes down to, I might have used take one, take 30, take 10, take 12 together, and you know it's all the same flow, same.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really recommend, you know, just using that example of like going to war, the soldier going to war and leaving his family, like go to an airport and look at how people say goodbye at the international departures. You know, there's so many different ways people say goodbye. There's some people crying. There's some people very happy. There's some people very silent. You know, they're very quiet and morbid. There's some people just, there's so many different ways, but they're all touching. They're all heartwarming. There's people that are anxious. There are people that are very excited. There's just so many different ways that people say goodbye. And like thinking about the husband going to war, you know, the different choices that you could do. Like, are they anxious that, you know, they're never going to come home? Like, what, you know, what is there something that they, that either of them has forgotten to say? Have they said everything they've wanted to say? Have they packed everything that needs to be packed? Have they, you know, like, what's missing? Or, you know, you could tell your actors, like, notice, you know, is there something that you haven't noticed before? Is there something about, you know, their face, or, like, you know, like, let's say the wife, you know, the wife's probably made, done herself up really nice. You know what I mean? Like, she's probably wearing her best Sunday dress, you know, looking like an absolute picture, because maybe she wants to take a photo with the family just before they leave. You know, as their final, like, this is what we all look like before you left for war, you know, because it's going to be, how many years are you going to be away? You know, are the kids there? The kids going to be growing up? Like, how tall are the kids now? You know, if the husband comes back, like, are they an inch taller? You know, are they grower? You know, has the boy become a man and now he's got some stubble on his face? Like, there's so many different ways, you know what I mean? Like, are like certain bad memories maybe coming up? Are you wishing for a different life? Like, you know, like, are you being very logical? Are you trying to avoid it and maybe trying to crack a joke, or trying to be, as you know, you want to be strong for your husband because you don't want him to miss you. You don't want him to think about you, you know, on the battlefield. Or maybe he does want to think about her because that's going to give him the strength to come back home. You know, there's so many different ways to look at the same thing and be like, no, I want to put on a brave face because I want my husband to fight the war. Or I want to put on a brave face because I want him to stay. I don't want him to go. You know, you can be brave and for two different outcomes, but the camera's going to read differently if you change the meaning behind it. So there's just so many different ways to play the same scene. So why would you waste it forcing your actors to do it the exactly the same way? It's just an absolute waste of time, and you'd be better served if you have a lot of different choices from your actors.
Yeah, that's it for me, man.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks, guys.